I'm Matt Katz. Welcome back to The Takeaway. With the world focused on the global pandemic, the U.S. is continuing to pressure the government of Venezuela. Last week, the Justice Department unsealed charges against Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and other top officials, alleging Maduro has been engaged in narco-terrorism. According to the indictment, Maduro helped lead the Cartel of the Suns, collaborating with the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, also known as the FARC, to traffic cocaine into the U.S. And then on Tuesday, the State Department released a proposal for a leadership transition in the country. The plan would be for a 5-member council to rule over the country while elections are organized for later this year. Neither Maduro nor the U.S.-backed opposition leader Juan Guaido would preside during this time. These are only the latest of the U.S. attempts to remove Maduro from power. But with the globe facing an economic and health crisis, analysts are left wondering why the U.S. government chose this moment to unseal the charges, and if they'll prevent Maduro's government from agreeing to any negotiated transition of power. I asked Alejandro Velasco, associate professor of Latin American history at New York University, to explain the newly unsealed charges.
So they're alleging a criminal conspiracy that goes back nominally to 2006, which is when Maduro became foreign minister under Chavez, but really going back all the way to 1999 when Hugo Chavez was first elected, saying that the Chavez government and Maduro, first as minister and later as president following upon Chavez's death, were plotting to flood, this is the literal words from the indictment, flood the United States with cocaine, processed through Colombia and then sent through intermediary ports to the United States. Further alleges that, especially since 2015, that this operation has become basically the one of the primary ways through which the Maduro government has been trying to destabilize the opposition and seek funds in order to enact its repression. And it links it to the ways in which the United States has also labeled the FARC in Colombia a terrorist organization. And so the narco trafficking charges are not new. The terrorism charges against the FARC are not new. The question is, why now? Why is this indictment being unsealed now?
And what's the point of the indictment? I mean, he's not going to be arrested and brought back to New York, right? I mean, what is the justification for this?
So here's where you get into a little bit of conjecture. I mean, there are several ways to think about the timing. The first one is that actually in light of the coronavirus crisis and the extent to which the Venezuelan public health system has been decimated over the last several years, there have been some really surprising and hopeful signs of rapprochement between sides of the opposition and sides of the government that had not really been seen for years. This was seen as a sign that perhaps these two sides could put aside some of their differences, the major differences that they have, and work collaboratively to tackle this crisis. And as has happened in other previous moments when there have been these attempts at rapprochement, the United States has sort of jumped in to basically put those efforts down by making it much harder, especially for the government, for the Maduro Chavista side to be able to partake in any kind of negotiations. That's one way to think about it. Another way is that this is really purely a political move by the Trump administration to secure the Florida vote, which is very much, is shaped by a sort of Cold War era politics of, hardline opposition, not only to the Cuban regime, but of course, increasingly to the Venezuelan government, as many Venezuelan expats live in Florida. So there's that, reading as well. The final reading is that perhaps this is a way to set the ground or to set the stage for an eventual, although this is far more of a far-fetched scenario, but who knows, set the groundwork for an eventual Panama 1989-like scenario where by having already labeled Maduro a narco-terrorist, they can invade and take him out that way. So any one of those possibilities is on the table.
Jeff, tell us about the trafficking organizations that the Department of Justice is claiming that Maduro is leading. What do they do?
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting here is that, as Alejandro was saying, the allegations of involvement in drug trafficking or links to the FARC, these are not new. But what is new is the Justice Department holding up this shadowy network of corrupt figures in the armed forces, the Cartel of the Suns. And it's interesting because that name, the Cartel of the Suns, it was first penned by a journalist in the 1990s, referring to corruption within the armed forces in the years predating Chavez's rise to power. So, I mean, this is really just shorthand for corruption within the armed forces in Venezuela. You know, as others have pointed out, the Cartel of the Suns, first of all, are not a cartel. Venezuela is not a drug-producing country. It is a transit country. And there's not much of a sense of a hierarchy among these sort of corrupt cells within the military. So we see this clear attempt to frame Venezuela as some kind of narco-state, as this series of linkages of power that simply don't respond to any kind of political logic, but to a criminal one.
You mentioned that Venezuela is not a drug producing state. It has a role in the trafficking, and you recently released a report on the trafficking flow. What do the drug trafficking patterns here look like from Venezuela or elsewhere to the U.S.?
So there's no question that there are significant organized crime groups operating in Venezuela, including drug trafficking organizations and Colombian guerrilla groups like the FARC. Very credible evidence of co-optation of state institutions in the country. But I think what's missing is a sense of scale here. As Alejandro mentioned, the announcement of the indictment claims that Maduro sought to flood the United States with cocaine in order to undermine the health and well-being of our nation. And if you just hear that, I mean, your first thought is, oh, gosh, I mean, Venezuela must be this superhighway for massive quantities of cocaine to the United States. And the reality is that's just not true. We just published a report looking at data from the U.S. Southern Command, the Interagency Consolidated Counter-Drug Database, which is what the U.S. government actually uses to assess cocaine flow throughout the hemisphere. And what we found is that Venezuela is not a primary transit country for U.S.-bound cocaine. In 2018, for instance, about 200 metric tons of cocaine passed through Venezuela. That same year, about 10 times as much cocaine passed through Colombia, and 7 times as much cocaine passed through Guatemala. So, I mean, I think we have to ask ourselves, why is the administration ringing the alarm bells about the quantities of cocaine that are flowing through Venezuela, when at the same time, the same administration has worked to kill anti-corruption efforts in more significant transit countries like Guatemala and Honduras?
I want to get a final thought from each of you on one thing that was touched on. The president of Honduras, Juan Orlando Hernandez, has deep ties to organized crime. His brother was recently found guilty of drug trafficking in a U.S. federal court. Why unseal charges against Maduro but remain silent on Hernandez? Why do you think we're seeing this disparity from the U.S. government? Alejandro?
I mean, listen, I'm an historian of 20th century Latin America. I mean, that places me in a position where double standards vis-a-vis U.S. policy towards the region are not exceptional, but really par for the course. The reasons why are also having to do with not just the ways in which the United States sort of plays favorites around the region in terms of who it lends support to and who it opposes, but also in particular the Trump administration. I think what it has really shown here, as in other cases, is that even the facade of any kind of similar, principled policy is really lost. And so why support Honduras and Hernandez? In part, it's because Hernandez and other Central American governments have supported the Trump administration in terms of its deportation policies. Why support Colombia? Well, because Colombia supports the Trump administration's policies around not just drug interdiction, but also energy policies and other kinds of efforts that are important to the Trump administration. So, I think that often what we tend to talk about is that foreign policy is about interests, not about principles. And I think what we are seeing here is that those interests are primarily driven by domestic political interests in part of the Trump administration, not really about the welfare of Venezuela or Venezuelans. And that, of course, is the deeper tragedy.
Yeah, I mean, I think what this shows is this is less about policy than it is about politics. You know, many of the same people that are in the administration working on Venezuela policy, people like Special Envoy for Venezuela, Elliot Abrams, even Attorney General William Barr. I mean, these people played key roles in the pressure campaign that led up to the 1989 invasion of Panama. And so these people are operating from the same failed Cold War playbook. You know, in their minds, you know, more pressure is better. You know, we're in a moment where the Trump administration is being criticized left and right for its response to a global pandemic. And, you know, I think in part the administration is trying to shore up its support in Florida. So, you know, I don't think we can deny the politics here. I'm very critical of this decision. And I think it's worth mentioning that we're not alone in being critical of this. The reality is the reason that it took so long for these indictments to be unsealed, many of which have been in place for years, is that there was so much internal resistance to this move from the Department of State, from the people that have been working for a transition in Venezuela for years now.
Alejandro Velasco is an associate professor of Latin American history at New York University, and Jeff Ramsey is the director for Venezuela at the Washington Office on Latin America. Alejandro, Jeff, thanks for offering this context and this historical perspective. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.